I'd like to share with you some things on the topic of vocational Christian work. Every Christian, at one time or another, sits through some meeting in which the pastor or the guest speaker is putting the heavy pressure on for missionary work or some kind of commitment to a vocational type of work in the Christian world. And you sit there and you squirm and you wonder, well, I ought to, but maybe I ought not. I don't really want to. And yet you feel just guilty because you haven't volunteered. And there have been probably hundreds of missionary conferences where this has gone on, where people have given their lives to full-time Christian work and where they have never gone, and where it has been just a passing emotion and where nothing ever happened. It's been kind of like a commitment that no one follows through on. There are others where the people have really made a commitment and have gone to the mission field and have found that they were not qualified and therefore have come back and have not succeeded in full-time Christian work. Today there are, I don't know how many, but hundreds or thousands of men who are trained in the pastorate, but who are not in pastorates. There are missionaries who are back who spend one term. The dropout rate is somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 50% of returning and not going back out to the mission field after the first term. And so I'd like to discuss with you today the circumstances of vocational Christian work, a little bit of how you try and find out if God is calling you, and maybe just give you a little bit of information as to what you will encounter and what you must do if God calls you into vocational Christian work. Now, there are many avenues that you can go down, and I'm going to treat this not from the perspective of a college student who is thinking about going into Christian work, but from the perspective of one who is already in his secular job, who God may be calling to change and go into some kind of a Christian work. I left my Air Force career 3 years ago, just a little over 3 years ago, and I'd like to share just a little bit of how that came about as an introduction to what we're doing. About 4 years ago this month, I was praying and asking God if He really wanted us to make a change and to go full-time with the Navigators. About 2 months before that, I had been asked to consider this possibility. We had known for several years, perhaps, that God may be calling us into something like this because we were starting to see our interests change and how God was giving fruit to the ministry that we were doing. And I also sensed that we were getting more and more busy, less opportunity to handle the things of the family and the job and the ministry that we were having at the Air Force Academy. And so it was a live possibility. But I had one particular question in mind. Would I really be more effective full-time in Christian work than I was now? Because I had a platform and an environment in which I was already having a ministry, and I thought there was a distinct possibility that one who was successful in the secular environment may not be successful in doing it full-time when you take this person out of this environment in which he has been placed and then over here to have to minister sort of from an outside position. And so I said, now, is it really true that I would be more effective and more fulfilled? Because it was not as a point of failure or a point of frustration that was leading us to this point. And so as I prayed about this, I counseled with a number of people. One former Air Force officer who was not a Christian said I ought to be put in an insane asylum for even considering it because I had 6.5 years left until a 20-year retirement. There were a number of people who felt that way. My grandmother cried. My parents were shocked. And you can just kind of go down the line as to the various reactions. And so, you know, as I went through this, there was not exactly what I would call unanimity of counsel. The pastor that I called, who had given more of these passionate pleas for the mission field, was opposed to it. I think primarily because it was not into a church, directly a church-related organization. And then the man that I called, and I thought who might be a little bit negative, was very much for it. A guy that had been of great help to me in my life, and that was with, had just retired from the Air Force, and had a very great heart for people remaining on active duty and being a witness. So as I put down the pros and cons, there were not a list that was overwhelmingly on one side. In fact, if you just looked at the pros and cons, there was no way you could make a decision. Both of my own feelings, of our family's feelings, or of the counsel that I had gotten. And so I was driven to a point where I simply had to get down before God and pray and ask to know His will in this circumstance. And frankly, I think that is the kind of issue that most will come to in the situation of considering Christian work. God will not always bring you to a point of failure so that you're forced to change. God will not always just wrap you on top of the head and make you emotionally hung up so that it's an emotional decision. In fact, one thing I want to discuss with you is the mysterious call to Christian service as we get on later in this time today. I believe that most often God will present the circumstances, the opportunities, reveal your gifts, and then you go before God and find out what you ought to do. It is not unlike any other decision, any other major decision that you would make in your life. And so as Mary and I prayed this thing through 4 years ago this month, and just about a week from now, about midnight, I was praying in a little motel over here in Colorado Springs, and I had spent about 2 days off by myself, and there was no clear thing. There were advantages either way, and God spoke to me through several passages. Romans 12:1, a very familiar passage, that present your bodies as a living sacrifice, and some other passages that I particularly wouldn't want to preach to you because they probably in preaching would be a little bit out of context. But God did impress me that I ought to at least make myself available for that opportunity, because God could easily sidetrack that thing. I still had a year and a half commitment to the Air Force. There were a number of other obstacles that had to be overcome. And so that night I prayed and told God that I was available and would move in that direction. And then I set down about four or five things that I felt should happen in the process of the next 2 or 3 months to really put God's seal on this particular decision. One of those was that Mary would have independent leading from God, because there was apprehension on the part of our family. Mary and I had been in a circumstance where we were very secure. We had many things going for us. We'd had a lot of fun. We'd had a good ministry. And all of a sudden, to make this total change, to say that no one even thought a moment of it would be slightly super spiritual, I think. And so she felt at first, well, I should let her give this testimony, but I'll proceed on. But she felt at first that, well, whatever God leads you in, then that's for me, because I'm with you. And I said, in most decisions, that's right. But I said, I felt in this, because of the tremendous impact on the family, the kind of job it would be, as you know, I travel a great deal, and so forth. I felt that Mary ought to have some very clear leading and peace from God herself. And God gave that to her. And the children had real peace. Our children are old enough so we could bring them in on the decision. Not that that would overrule it, because one of them had just gotten his ID card and didn't particularly want to give that up. You know, little things like that were in their minds, so I'm not sure that was actually a spiritual issue. I said, well, I can't go to the BX anymore, and so, you know, there were little issues like that. But basically, they were used to moving. We had moved a number of times, and it was not a big thing. They were secure in our home, and so it was not an issue. Their security was not in my job. So God did lead, and so I'd like to just, with that introduction, share some of the factors that not only have become apparent since I've been in vocational Christian work, but also that I have found from others. Now, you've noticed that I've used the term vocational Christian work in opposition to the term full-time Christian work. I hold very strongly to what I believe is a scriptural teaching that there is no such thing as one Christian who is more full-time than another. There is no special blessing to being in Christian work, because all of us are responsible to God for all of our time, all of our money, and all of our effort. And that if everybody left the secular world and went into a full-time circumstance, you know, who would be there either to support financially or to be in among the people? One of the things I enjoy most about these 2 weeks that I'm spending active duty is I'm back in contact again with a number of men that I worked with on my last assignment. One of them has either come to know the Lord or has just come out farther for the Lord. I've had opportunity already to share with them. In fact, the very first day that I came up there, we were into it again, just picking up on past witness that we had had with these people. And I've got an office mate right now who I really feel that we'll have a clear opportunity to share again with, as he was with three of us who were Christians at a lunch about 2 months ago when I went up for one day. So I really enjoy being back and involved in that, what I would consider to be a pagan environment. And so you can't have everybody pulled out of that. But God clearly will call some, and to varying kinds of things. So let me first go through with you some various definitions that I think you need to keep in mind in terms of what we are calling full-time Christian work. First of all, one definition that I'd like to make is, what kinds of full-time Christian work are we talking about? Well, there are two categories and two locational things that I'd like to just mention to you so you can click into your mind what kind of thing we're talking about. Okay, the first category is that of direct ministry. By that I mean one who is exercising primarily speaking type of gifts. Pastors, missionaries. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't do the focus trick. Pastors, missionaries, Christian education directors, people who are doing church planting overseas, a Youth for Christ director, one who are doing a ministry like I am in the Navigators. Just any of a number of things where the ministry is primarily to people and depends on either a teaching gift, an exhortation gift, that kind of an operation. Do you understand what I mean by direct ministry? The second kind is that of support or service types of full vocational Christian work. This is where you would be in a circumstance where you are not in the speaking ministry, but in the serving type of ministries, where you are performing the administrative or support functions for a given mission. Overseas, there are many places for people who go down to build, to operate radio stations, to maintain vehicles, to fly airplanes, to do printing, and just right on down the line, or in just straight administrative function, financial functions, organization, building. Any of a number of those kinds of things, and they are valid, full-time, vocational Christian work callings. And there are many who do not consider vocational Christian work because they don't see themselves in a circumstance of being able to speak, preach, teach, that sort of thing. But there's a tremendous need. There is nothing more frustrating than for a man to go out and operate in an area in which he is not called. So for a person to be called to this vocational Christian work who does not have the speaking gifts, but then presses on and tries to do them. And I think you could have many instances of where that has happened, where really they ought to have gone and they were called, but they ought to have been in a support function, which is every bit as necessary. The Old Testament principle is that those who stayed by the stuff should share in the spoils with those who went out to battle. And it's not implying that those are not out to battle. All of us are ministering all the time and have that responsibility. Honey, would you get me some more hot coffee here? My throat is giving me a bad time. Okay, the next thing I'd like to just, and you, this is obvious, but we have things that would be called home missions. That is, missions in the context of the continental United States is basically what I would call that. A pastorate, a Christian ed director, teaching in a Christian school, and so forth. You see, that would be functioning here. And then you have the idea of a foreign missionary just going out of the continental United States to even similar type of functions. But the prime issue there is changing cultures, is how I define foreign missionaries. Therefore, I consider my friends down at Rehoboth Mission with the Navajos or with the Navajo Gospel Crusade being in foreign missions because they have changed cultures. Do you see what I mean? So I think there are some circumstances in which one could be in the United States and be effectively a foreign missionary, because you have changed cultures and have gone into a totally different kind of situation. Okay, are there any questions on my definitions there? I need to take a drink so you can see if there's any question. Is that clear to you? Okay, now, let me go on and share with you what I consider to be a number of myths of vocational Christian work. I feel we have a rather elated idea, and if I must say so, I don't know, at least right now, I do not know where some of the things I am going to share with you are actually stated in printing. Now, I'm sure they are somewhere, but somehow we tend to paint too rosy a picture. And I would like to just share with you a few of these myths, and what I'd like to do, I'll go through them rather quickly, otherwise I could take the entire rest of the time on this section. And then after I have shared, or as I share them, if you have any question or say, hey, that may not be quite right or whatever, I want you to come up at that point and ask it, okay? The first myth that I would share with you is that Christian work is easy. You know, that you will get into a circumstance where you, if you go into Christian work, man, you won't have that 8-to-5 stuff. You won't have this business of all the pressure, you won't have all of this. Well, folks, most people that I know in vocational Christian work, pastors or anyone, put in 50, 60, and 70 hours a week. I know of very few people who put in a light schedule, because I have found that if a guy does not produce in vocational Christian work, he will get fired. The people will fire him. And the pastors or a church staff, if you find that one of the church staff is being lazy, you will not put up with them. And I don't know any Christian work, there may be some, where a guy can kind of goof off. And probably most of all, that those who go into it are pretty, in many ways, are self-motivated. Now, when you're in the support functions, there's some additional pressures that come in that system. Though, like out at Glen Eyrie, there is an 8-to-5 type of job, but yet people can put in overtime, and especially those who are in a management capacity have to put in a tremendous amount of overtime. The second myth, and I would write these out, but you can just jot them down. The second myth is that there will be less pressure to produce. Now, if anything, there's more pressure to produce, but it's hard to measure what production is. And so, therefore, because of the need to know that you're producing, many try and put measurements like numbers of meetings, attendance at meetings, conversions, baptisms, counseling sessions, and numerical growth in various areas of ministry. Or if you're in a support function, it's just like anywhere else, how much you get done in a given time for a given amount of money. And I frankly see very little difference in the Christian world between it and the non-Christian world in terms of the pressure to produce something. If a man or a woman goes into the Christian field and does not produce, I can almost guarantee that it will head them toward a nervous breakdown, because there is an unusual pressure that ensues when you are getting money that people are giving, and you know you're supposed to be doing something, and you sit there and wonder, what in the world do you do? I remember when I was in college, a pastor had the rather questionable judgment to hire me as a youth director for a summer. Now, he didn't pay me very much, so he might not have been too unwise at that. But I didn't know anything of what I ought to do. I mean, I just finished my, I guess it was my sophomore year in college. And here I was supposed to go to this church and run the youth for the summer. Well, I'd never had 1 ounce of training. I'd been very involved in youth programs. And I just sometimes would sit down and say, now let's see, now what am I supposed to do? Okay, I ought to read my Bible. That's good for people in Christian work. And then I ought to do this. And I'm sure I wasted half the summer. But it was a great pressure because I did not know what I ought to do. And I've seen instances where people have not known what to do and where they've gotten extremely frustrated and have not been able to produce and have had to leave Christian work. Okay, the next one is that the next myth, the third one, is there will be a more spiritual environment. And that simply is not true. If you look at most churches, you'll find out that there are conflicts and that spiritual people do very bad things. There are occasional times where the things are unethical, but somehow it's spiritualized. And there are things where you just can't understand why someone would act like this. And somehow you go in with the expectation that we'll always pray over every problem and God will make it work out. And it just doesn't happen that way. What happens is that people still operate in the flesh. People still live carnal Christian lives. People still sin. And people's personalities are about the same as they were when they were in the secular world, and very little will have changed. So there is not a more spiritual environment. There is the advantage that if people are walking with God, that you have a better chance of resolving the conflicts, and that you can go on a scriptural basis with people. But nevertheless, there is not necessarily a more spiritual environment. Now, I hope there are things more spiritual. But don't expect that to be the main item that you would encounter. You know, just in contrast to myself, that I said the Air Force did let me out, Jerry Armstrong applied for a similar type of thing, and they turned him down. You know, he opened the door, made the decision, and they turned Jerry down. And so, you know, God is very able to lead. I just happened to think of that in addition to my introduction that I gave you. So let me go on now with another myth. Okay, the myth, there will be less conflict. If people are involved, there will be more conflict. And in fact, I believe the conflict escalates more than in a secular context because spiritual overtones give a second face to every kind of a conflict. In other words, you expect something different in the area of conflict. And we do not know how to have conflict in the Christian community. I know how to interact in the secular community. One of the things that was difficult for me to learn, and Bob probably remembers it because he was in the meetings when he was running California, that one of the RDs had to take me for a little walk. It was Dwight Hill, Bob, and I was used to encountering things on a secular environment where you just went after it and used logic and everything and you just pressed on and carried on the arguments. And he took me for a little walk and told me that I was going a little too fast and I was trying to press a little too hard on some issues and operating a little bit like I did in the secular world. Because I found there that you could go in and get into just a horrendous argument in over technical issues or whatever, and walk out friends. And, you know, you just continued the argument the next day. But somehow, when you were supposed to pray about it and get God's will, you know, and it wasn't just a technical issue, I had to make an adjustment in how I operated in that context. And so it made it more difficult for me in terms of the resolution of conflicts. Okay, the next myth is that there will be adequate time for prayer and Bible study. I don't think there will be any more time. In fact, in many cases, there may be less. I have just as much difficulty now getting time with God and time in the Word than I did as I did before. Now, in my particular job, I can run it on a little different time schedule, but there are still pressures, and there are still things that keep you from getting it. If you weren't getting it before, you probably will not get it later. The next myth is this one. Going into vocational Christian work is a sacrifice. Now, it is very difficult for me to understand that statement. And the reason it is it a sacrifice to be in God's will? Now, I'm not talking about financial sacrifice, but I'm talking about the fact that if God is called, there is no sacrifice. Now, there are circumstances where, from a human viewpoint, there is great sacrifice. For the person who goes to an overseas area, it is going to have a very definite impact on his family. And it'll have an impact on their the way they live and what they've been brought up to be and so forth. So you can go down and say, yeah, there is sacrifice. In the faith mission business, where there is not a guaranteed salary, there may be some financial sacrifice. There may be some real difficult times financially. But yet God, if he has called you, has promised to bless, and so therefore I would say that it is not a sacrifice to go into full-time Christian work, but I believe it can be fantastically fulfilling. The next myth is you must have a mysterious call to go into Christian work, some emotional call from God. Now, we understand that that sometimes can happen, and we cannot limit God to that bolt of lightning that comes out. But frankly, though I would never discourage that kind of a missionary conference appeal, but yet I would say that it is probably more rare than we would expect. I believe that God will lead you through some other things, and if you wait for that feeling or the call, you may spend your life not going to last meetings of missionary conferences or not getting in a place where someone could get you. I know for a while there was a period of time in my younger life where I had a fear that God would call me to the mission field. Well, you need to deal with that. You need to deal with that. I have to deal with that. But yet God can call you in another way. And if you wait for the feeling, you may miss God's calling to you. And I personally would encourage every Christian to consider that possibility that God might be calling them to some aspect of Christian service. So I would encourage you to allow God to lead normally through your circumstances, and I want to get into how you look at that in just a little bit. The next myth is one that is called the need constitutes a call. That is, you have someone call and you have all the pictures of the dying, hungry, and all that over in India or whatever it may be, and there is such a fantastic need that you must go. Or it was like one time I was in a church and they came to me and said, Jerry, would you lead the choir? And I said, well, I doubt it, but I'll be glad to pray about it. And so I prayed and I said, no. I said, well, man, there's a fantastic need, and you're the only one in the church who could do it. And I said, well, then it's obvious to me that we should not have a choir. And that didn't go over too well. In fact, the pastor then started leading the choir, which I felt was wrong, because, see, we were letting the need run our system. And the fact is that there will always be more needs than can be met or fulfilled. And just because there's a need, it does not constitute a call for you personally. Now, the need is a factor. I doubt if you're going to be called where there is not a need. But don't let that emotional thing of the great need be the thing that calls you, because I believe there is a different foundation for the call that God will give you. Now, the last myth is my gifts will be used more fully. Now, if I understand the teaching in the Scriptures on gifts, there is nothing in the Bible that could possibly support that. Because the gifts are not tied to one's occupation. The gifts are tied to fulfilling a ministry function in the body of Christ. Now, there are certain gifts that are required in certain full-time positions. And you don't want to operate where you are not gifted. And there is also a thing that I would call the extent of your gift. And I will talk about that again in just a few moments. But God can use your gifts as fully where you are now as in vocational Christian work. Now, there are instances, I believe, where you can be using that gift over a greater expanse of time. But that is not a sufficient reason to be in vocational Christian work. Just because a man is a good teacher or preacher does not necessarily mean he ought to be a pastor, because if he's going to do that, he's got to be a manager and a counselor too. Do you see what I mean? So, you know, it's easy to be carried on by the wrong things. So let me stop there for a moment, open it to some questions, and then I'm going to go on to some guidelines for considering vocational Christian work. Do you have any questions on any of these myths? Yes.
The one that you mentioned about the conflicts that occur within Christian organizations. Now, the way I understand it is, what you were saying is that you'll have the same conflicts that you would have in the secular world.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, can these conflicts be resolved? I've seen so many cases where it seems that the conflict is not resolved and it's not really handled any different than it would be in a secular situation.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that because a person is part of a Christian organization, that we have something more to go on and the conflict should be able to be resolved.
Yes, that's correct. And I think I want to be careful that I don't push too far in one direction. I wanted to make a point to you. So when I want to make a point, I tend to give some unequivocal statements in a far left. You know, I'm the only one in the world that doesn't overstate anything. But I do, of course. Now, it is true that we do have more resources for resolving the conflict. But what we tend to do is we tend to depend totally on the spiritual things, say that'll take care of it. Whereas there are methods in business, for instance, of resolving the conflicts, that a businessman will just go ahead and work that out, which we might not avail ourselves of. But the problem is sin in any case. Only through pride comes contention. And so wherever there's conflict, there is sin. And it's generally two-way. And the fact is that people through pride are unwilling to admit they are wrong. Now, in the secular world, they can say, you're fired. Now, you can some in the Christian world, but it's a little tougher, because we're supposed to be a little bit more compassionate. You know, if you can't get along with this person and you can't resolve this conflict, then I'm going to fire one of you. You know, that's the way you could operate. And that tends to make conflicts resolve a little more quickly when you have that kind of a thing. But in the Christian context, they get all confused between two things. One is, in the Christian work, you seldom are having only conflicts among those who are full-time members, see. It involves a volunteer force also that's got to be involved, you know, our constituency, the people in the church. And that makes it very, very complicated. Bob, you might want to comment. You have to run Glenary. What do you say in this area of the conflicts?
Not having been in the secular world for 20 years, I can't speak of the difference.
Mm-hmm.
We do have conflicts, we try and resolve them, but I don't have a secular context to compare.
Well, in my case, where I'm operating with fairly mature people, I find that the conflicts do resolve and that we do find spiritual issues. But they are no less of an emotional circumstance. It's much more difficult to live with the conflict. In the business world, you can live with the conflict unresolved and still get the job done. In the Christian community, when you have those conflicts, it generally throws the brakes on the train and everything stops. You see what I mean? And that's where the real problem comes. Your productivity just goes zip in terms of what you're supposed to accomplish when conflict is existing. I think the main thing I want to point out is that it is there and you will not avoid it. I think some people come in naively expecting it to be a church service 8 hours a day. And it somehow is not that. And I think that's the main thing. Bob, you have any comments? You've been in both worlds.
Well, I think the thing that really hits hard in the Christian context is the fact that you don't resolve the conflicts in your personal walk with the Lord is affected. Therefore, you're totally ineffective in both areas, in your work and also in your personal devotion to Christ.
Yeah.
But you know it should be taken care of.
Okay. Bob's got a unique thing that he was in the secular world, then he was in the direct ministry function, and now he's in a support ministry function. So he can relate to pretty well all of those areas. Yes. Yeah.
I just thought I'd comment that in the secular world, very often there's a realization that conflict is a normal part of your activities. Just because you're in a productive situation or something like that, management, different kinds of management has different kinds of methods, and people tend to accept that a conflict is a normal thing. But I would imagine that in the vocational Christian thing, that people wouldn't think that. You know, we're all supposed to be so spiritual. And we're not supposed to have conflicts.
Yeah.
So it's not an okay kind of a thing to have a conflict, so it would tend to stop things.
Okay, well, that's a good point. In fact, I've just noticed in going back on this 2 weeks active duty, I'm smack in the middle of conflicts every day. And I don't even think of it as being conflict. It does not occur to me that we're having an argument. And, you know, we just get into the issues, you know.
Well, actually, there's nothing wrong with having a conflict, you know,
and
grow from the experience of the situation, because it might be the only way God's going to get through to us.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, and just thinking back on just what I'm doing on my active duty right now, I'm writing two papers that are going to generate some conflict. And, you know, I just know it because I'm writing on some very emotional issues in the assignment that they've given me to do to evaluate and critique certain things. So, great. You know, the guy said, "Can you finish it so you can defend it?" They want me to finish it by the middle of next week. So that they can fry me if they, you know, and you can get into it. And so I'm going to work hard at the beginning of the week to finish it up so you can have some fun. You know, and everybody goes after it with great fervor.
I think what Bob here says is very true. We feel that the resolving of the conflict is the most important business we have when conflict arises. And we give it all our attention, and until it's resolved, we don't feel that we can proceed with the business at hand. But I have observed that people coming into our operation from the secular world don't get too concerned about the conflicts. It's been kind of a puzzle to me how they can keep moving ahead in their job, and the conflicts don't seem to bother them.
Well, I can say that from experience. Yeah, it's... And by the way, I consider that to be one of the more important things of a person having had some secular experience. I have taken to having most of the men that come on our staff get a couple years of experience in a secular job before we put them into a full-time circumstance. And because I think it'll build in their lives. And by the way, it's a reason that I feel that you who are in a secular job should seriously consider whether God wants you in a different circumstance. Because I think you have a unique training and ability. For instance, Bob is, and Ken and Bob Potter are always looking for people, not just out of college, but people who have a high level of experience and expertise in a certain kind of an area to be willing to come, and it is at a lesser pay, to come and to serve and to give themselves to a particular function that contributes to the Christian need. Now, I want to just make a comment. Matthew 9:37 through 38 will always be true. And it says, "Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of harvest to send out workers into his harvest.'" And I can say with high levels of conviction and get as emotional as any missionary speaker could that God desperately needs people like you and others like you to get into vocational Christian work. But the true need that there is can be fulfilled only by people who meet three qualifications in their lives and abilities. One is that they are committed to Jesus Christ. Secondly, is that they are qualified. That is, they have certain gifts and abilities to fulfill that need. And thirdly, that they are trained in the function that they are supposed to do. You can't expect someone just to immediately, even when they're qualified, to jump in and do it immediately. In the job that I'm working in my reserve thing, the great difficulty is it usually takes a year to orient someone into the job. And so if it were not for my past experience in this same command and knowing some of the people and my technical background, I couldn't even get up to speed, and I wonder if I will. So there's that time of training, even though I would be qualified. Do you see what I mean? Committed, qualified, trained people. And I believe that everyone should consider it. Okay, now what are the guidelines for considering vocational Christian work? The first are the scriptural qualifications. I believe that each Christian, and particularly those who are in a full-time capacity, vocational capacity, ought to fulfill the qualifications of 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. That is, they are qualified as an elder. That is, their family, their personal life, their growth, they're mature people. They're growing up in Jesus Christ. And especially in the line functions. Now, I don't know whether how you guys in the support areas feel about this, if the same qualifications should be put on a person who comes into a support issue. Do you have any comment on that, Bob? Now, I really think that anyone, I think everybody should fulfill these, but I think we must make it a basis. And I believe where Christian colleges, seminaries, and everybody go off track, and boy, they have done it right and left, is that they hire a person because of his great qualifications and do not carefully consider that they are qualified spiritually. That has happened to people time and time again. They see all the PhDs and the letters behind his name, and they just happen to need a man like that to uplift the image of their Christian institution, and they hire him saying, oh yeah, I know he doesn't quite jive with our view of salvation of Scripture, but you know, we've got enough influence. Well, soon that guy is usually so smart, so capable, that he ends up taking over and hiring his own people and has the vote on the next one that's hired. Then there are two, and then there are three, and pretty soon you know it, you've gone down the drain in terms of effectiveness. The second area is one that we've preached on much here at Temple, and that is discerning your spiritual gifts and abilities. You really do need to have some inkling of your own gifting and your own abilities. Now, I don't preach too hard on that because I'm not sure that you can be super definitive in those areas. But yet there are some things that will come out obviously. Which brings me to the third point. Not only do you need to know the gifts that you may have, but there are two aspects of those gifts that you need to know about. And that is the extent and capacity of those gifts. And that is probably the greatest discovery that I have made in the last couple of years relating to the area of gifts. It's not just that there are gifts. That is, you may have a teaching gift, but you may not be Howard Hendricks. See, you may be have a preaching gift, but you're not a Haddon Robinson. You may have a gift in administration, but you're not an R.G. Letourneau. Or whatever the case may be, that is, within specific gifting areas, there are also extent and capacity. Let me define what I mean by those two things. Okay, extent is how... It's hard to even express it, but how much of that gift you have. In other words, are you highly gifted in that particular area? Highly qualified. It's like some people are mechanically inclined, but some are mechanical geniuses. See, there are levels of abilities within a same ability scope. Do you understand what I mean there? Okay, but the second thing is capacity. And that is not so much how highly gifted you are, But how many different inputs, how much production you can put out within the context of your gift. And I think it relates greatly to how much pressure you can take. Now that's my definition, so I call that extent and capacity. Someone may be a very gifted preacher, but crushes under the load of counseling, and therefore cannot be a pastor. Do you see what I mean by that? Someone may be a very gifted person in a support area, but is not able to take all the varied inputs that may come in a very small organization, which most Christian organizations are, where you have a multifaceted input and unusual pressures that are involved, and a lot of sacrifice in that way that's called for. So I would encourage you to try and determine what you have in the area of gifts and also the extent of your gift. Okay, the next thing is I would urge you to get an evaluation of your own gifts. Now, here is a process that I would go through. And if you want to jot these down, you may. I apologize for not having this out on a handout, but this is the first time I've ever shared this. And I sometimes don't put things in paper like that the very first time I would go through it. So you can give me feedback on what more you need to have. Okay, first of all, what are a few of my strengths? Just be able to jot them down. Secondly, how do you know those are strengths? That is, specifically, where have you seen it? For instance, when I was asked to go full-time, and the individual who talked to me said that I believe you can do this, this, and this, or you have these abilities, and I said, now how do you know? I mean, where have you really seen that in my life? How do you know that I wasn't just pulling a smoke screen over you, you know, with a lot of activity, because I do tend to activity. And I knew that in my own life. And so I said, how do you really know? Because I wanted to be sure that someone else had observed this. The third thing to put down is, what are a few of my weaknesses? And you do need to get into some areas of your weaknesses in order to balance out your strengths. Fourth, if I were to enter Christian ministry, would I do well? What would I do well? In other words, is there some area that you could do, that you can see, taking where you are now to what you would do then? Fifthly, what would I have a difficult time doing? That is sometimes as important as figuring out what you can do, to understand what would be very difficult for you to do. Because many times when you go into a job, you know it's as important to say, by the way, I am not able to do this and I would really have a difficult time doing it. And to just say that. Okay, the sixth item is, how do you feel, to ask someone else this question, how do you feel I would do at, and then name it. You see what I mean? You have the job in mind now, or the area, then go to somebody and say, how do you feel I would do at printing? How do you feel I would do at being a pastor? How do you feel I would do, you see, get those things and have someone respond on that, and then ask them what evidence they've actually seen that would make them feel that way. Okay, the other area in terms of considering it is, I think you have to have family unity. That your, especially your husband or your wife, needs to be with you in this process. Because you cannot do a vocational Christian work unless you are together as a couple and as a family. That is the one major difference that I feel is involved. Because it just costs too much of all of you. And so I would like to challenge you today that God can lead you personally into vocational Christian work. And it is something that should be considered. It is not better than being in a secular job, but it is different. And God can call you. God can call you to stay where you are, but the calling is of no avail unless you, where you are right now, have learned to cope with your circumstances and to have some kind of a ministry outreach, and to have a life with God that you know you are growing in Him. So to consider vocational Christian work when you are not succeeding, not so much in your job, but in putting your life together where you are now, would probably not be a thing to do. It might be a feeling of escape from the circumstance that you're in. And when all the facts are in, and you know what God wants, you must act. And you have to step out on raw faith. You cannot just get it all together on paper. And in spite of all the things that I have said on gifting and everything else, God has an uncanny way of using some very unlikely people in some very unusual ways. From what I can tell of D.L. Moody, nobody would have picked him to do what he has done, or Hudson Taylor, or many others that you can see whom God has used in a very, very unusual way in the history of the church. And so God can take us out of some very different circumstance and equip you in a way you ought to, you can do other things. In Numbers 11:23, it says, "And the Lord said to Moses, Is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not." I think that's a good conclusion to that kind of thing. So let's stop, see if there are some questions or some areas that you'd like to interact on a little more fully. We have about 6 minutes left. And yes.
One thing that came to my mind, Jerry, you were discussing the myth about vocational Christian work.
Yes.
I've had said to you before that if you don't feel fulfilled in your secular job, then maybe you should be considering full-time Christian work.
Okay.
The feeling was that you become somewhat frustrated by the pressures and then using all of your energy on your secular job, and maybe you should be using it on a more full-time basis for the Lord rather than spinning your wheels for the Lord.
Okay, if you are 30 or 35, you know, if you're in that category and that is starting to happen to you, I would consider that as an indicator. If you've just left college, I would not consider it to be a very good indicator. Now, that's just my opinion on that. Now, because I believe that God wants you to learn to live in an environment which puts pressures on you and to learn to cope with that. And I don't think you'd ever be totally fulfilled in a job, because that is something I'm going to speak on in 2 weeks, what fulfillment is. But I believe that later on, after having been fulfilled in your job, then God starts bringing some things in to change you and to change, and you start feeling some uneasiness about your secular work, then I think God may be giving an indicator that it's time that you might want to consider that. So I would wrestle personally with the issue of whether my lack of fulfillment is just my lack of commitment to the Lord and being willing to be where I am, or whether it could be His leading out. I would lean to say that that would only be one factor. So now, that wasn't a very big factor for me, I must admit, because I was enjoying my work very much. You have some bum jobs, you know, at various times. But, you know, overall, it was really a good thing. And so I'd be careful in using that one as a prime indicator. I'd rather see you be in the Word and seeing what God wants. And I'd rather see, in fact, if there were any one thing that drove you, I would like it to be this. Besides the Word of God, you know, just getting a direct call. And that is that you are seeing fruit in your life. And God is starting to multiply that fruit around you. In such a way that you say, hey, maybe God's trying to reveal that He wants me to use this gift in a slightly different fashion. That to me would be a real thing. Now, in the support areas, I think a little bit of the unrest in terms of wanting to see God just contribute with your secular abilities to a larger mission. That's a possibility. I know of a man who did that just recently. Okay, some other thoughts, questions? Okay, let me tell you what we'd like to do next week. Next week, we'd like to break this group down into several smaller groups. And we would like to, in the process of using a very brief questionnaire, or 4 or 5 questions, to ensue into a discussion that relates directly to you and your type of job. So let me see the approximate categories, and Bob will be running this particular one. And so how many of you, how many housewives do we have here? Can I just see your hand? Okay. And there are enough to have a small discussion there. How many working women? Can I just see? Okay, there's enough for a discussion in that area. How many people work in a... let me see, can I see my paper I gave you, Bob? If you've got it there. Here we go. I'd written down the categories, and I don't want to miss those. How many work in an office type of environment? Basically 8 to 5, that type of thing. Can I see your hands? Okay, office type environment would do the trick, okay? How many of you work in a job which would be, well, like Lou would work in, you work as a mechanic, don't you, Lou? Okay, this is not an office type job. You've got a certain thing you must produce in terms of labor and output and skill. So how many work in that kind of a circumstance? Okay, there are 3 or 4 there. Okay, and how many are in military? Can I see your hands? Okay, now have I left any significant group out? Okay, student. Sorry about that. What I'd suggest you do is, depending on what you intend to do, you'd sit in on one of those groups that I just mentioned.